Welcome to Fronteras, a Changing America. I'm your host, Vanessa Dalbovich. A Republican lawmaker is challenging the Department of Homeland Security on its reporting of undocumented migrants crossing into the U.S. through the Mexican border. For the past 2 years, officials have said that illegal crossings into the U.S. are down. But now, the department is accused of not fully reporting the number of people who crossed the border successfully. From Tucson, Michelle Marisco has her story.
The Border Patrol regularly releases its numbers of how many illegal migrants were apprehended at the border. But they also have a way of tracking the people who cross the border illegally and then get away. Agents count the number of footprints or signs of people who slip past them, and then that number is used internally by the Border Patrol to come up with rough estimates of how many illegal migrants made it in. But Congressman Daryl Issa says he has data from within Homeland Security that shows in the past year, the agency has not counted everybody who got away. In a letter he sent to DHS Secretary Janet Napolitano on March 1, Issa says he analyzed a series of Border Patrol shift reports over a one-week period in Casa Grande, Arizona. Those reports showed 82 people who crossed the border illegally and were never caught, but were also never counted as so-called gotaways. Mike Fisher is head of the U.S. Border Patrol.
And so the allegation that we're somehow doing this to misrepresent the data for whatever reason is just patently false at this point.
Now, Fisher says he went out to that particular station himself and found that agents chased and counted gotaways as a matter of policy. Issa wrote that if 82 got away in Casa Grande, then multiplied out over 1 year and across the whole border, he estimates that more than 250,000 people crossed into the U.S. and disappeared. Sean Moran is spokesman for the National Border Patrol Council. He says his undercounting is nothing new. He said agency officials at local levels have manipulated the numbers in the past.
We've had managers that have ordered sensors that we have in the ground turned off in areas that we know illegal aliens are using to get into the country.
Border Patrol Chief Fisher says he's agreed to share agency information with ISA. 1998 was the last time arrest data was investigated. At the time, the Office of Inspector General concluded that there were no attempts to mislead the public. But it did discover inefficiencies in data collection and reporting. In Tucson, I'm Michelle Marisco.
Several southwestern Native American tribes are fighting a large wind farm planned near the town of Ocotillo. The tribes say there are more than 400 archaeological sites on the land where the turbines would be located. From our Fronteras desk, Jill Replogle has the story.
The Ocotillo Wind Express Energy Project, proposed by Pattern Energy, would produce up to 356 megawatts of electricity. It's one of the largest renewable energy projects planned on public land administered by the Bureau of Land Management. The Kokopa, Quechan, and Kumaya Native American tribes say the project would desecrate a vast swath of land that's part of their traditional cultural landscape. Ancient ceremonial sites, geoglyphs, and other remnants of the tribe's history are scattered across the 12,500 acres where the turbines will be placed, they say. Anthony Pico is chairman of the Viejas Band of Kumaya Indians. At a symposium on renewable energy in San Diego, Pico said federal and county officials haven't engaged the tribes in meaningful consultation about the project against federal and state law.
And without listening to us, without recording what we have to say, without putting those in an environmental impact study, an archaeological study, they're not understanding where we're coming from.
The Bureau of Land Management released the final environmental impact statement for the wind farm on March 9th. Pico says the tribes still hope to convince federal officials to halt the project. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replogle.
Nora Barraza took the office of mayor of Mesilla 2 years ago. Since then, she says she has accomplished many goals and has more plans for the town's future. She joins us in the studio now to talk about the failed vote on a much-needed general obligation bond and what recently obtained state appropriations will be used for. Tell me a bit about your background.
A little bit about my background. First, I was born and raised in the town of Mesilla, so I'm fifth generation Mesillera. And being born and raised in a small community always has its advantages and disadvantages. But I think the biggest advantage is all the families get to know each other. And I was educated in the public schools here in Las Cruces. I worked for the Las Cruces Public Schools for 30 years as a secretary. During that era, I got married, have two children, both. One is a graduate from NMSU. The other will be graduating here, hopefully within the next year. And I've always wanted to give back to my community, so I have been very involved with our church at the Basilica of San Albino and, of course, in the town council.
Now, I know you've got some pretty deep roots in Mesilla. Just how far back do those go?
Oh, they go back to the 1800s, mid-1800s, as far as we can. We're trying to put together a family history chart, and we've been able to go to about 1850s.
And I also think I found out somewhere that there were other legislators in your family history.
Oh, absolutely. My grandmother was very politically involved back in the early 1900s. And she would go out to the fields and bring in people to come in to vote right around that time when women had the right to vote. So she was very, very active in trying to make sure everyone would come into the voting place to vote. We've also had my nephew, actually, is the county assessor here currently. And we've had in law enforcement also. We've had families in law enforcement.
So what motivated you to run for mayor of Mesilla?
What motivated me, I had been on the town council for 8 years. I had been a trustee for the town of Mesilla. And I just felt that we were kind of stale and not moving in the right direction. With modern technology and just so much out there, a lot of interaction. As a trustee, I was able to attend a lot of conferences, meetings, and so I had an opportunity to just see what was out there. And I felt the town was not taking advantage of the opportunities out there. So I felt if I ran for mayor and won as mayor, that we would start moving in a new direction and just trying to catch up to the 21st century and be more active and interact with other communities throughout the state of New Mexico.
So with that overall picture in mind, what goals have you accomplished so far in your tenure?
As when I came in as mayor 2 years ago, one of the crises we were facing at that time were we had our staff at 32 hours due to budget restraints and balancing a budget but still trying to provide services to our constituents. So I feel in the last 2 years as mayor, first of all, we were able to come up with a good balanced budget. Unfortunately, the first year we had to do a reduction in force. We did have two and a half positions that we had to eliminate. So our staff had to pick up additional duties to cover those two and a half positions. Also, just coming up with a good balanced budget, a solid foundation. So we have been able to do both. We have been able to balance our budget. This coming year, where our goal is to provide a 1-3% cost of living raise to our employees. We were able also to bring employees back to a 40-hour week. Plus, I think in the 2 years, morale has really changed within the departments. Department heads are taking a more active role within their departments and with the budget process, as we have involved more of the trustees in a lot of the decision-making and involvement with the budget process. So in 2 years, we've really made a lot of progress.
So with those accomplished, what are your future goals for Mesilla? What's your next projects that you want to tackle?
Well, most definitely our public safety building is one of our high priorities. As many of the viewers are aware, we did ask our voters at this last election, March 6th, to approve a general obligation bond for renovation of our public safety building, but also for a fire apparatus. That currently the apparatus we have was purchased in the 80s, and we purchased it as a used vehicle. So last year alone, we had to spend $40,000 in repairs in our fire apparatuses. So our goal is to purchase a new one or look for a fairly good used one, which runs maybe about $200,000. And, of course, just to address the needs of the public safety building at this time. Plus, also, we had submitted to the governor our list of capital outlay infrastructure projects, and we kind of prioritized. And so we came up with, we had four top priorities, one being public safety building. The other is renovation of our plaza area, our kiosco. The other was for road repairs, and the other was for upgrading our playground equipment.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that, that general obligation bond that, that failed at the election. What are your thoughts on the outcome of that? Why do you think that people voted that down?
Gosh, we were very disappointed with the outcome of it, but we realized this is the first time ever for the town of Mesilla and for the residents. So part of it, I think, was just not educating the residents or the property owners enough for them to understand what a general obligation was. A lot of the residents felt that the property tax would, that base rate would change, which is a percentage. And that was not the case. The rate of the property tax increase was not going to be affected. The state, the town of Mesilla currently has the second lowest property tax rate in the state of New Mexico. It has never been raised since we incorporated in the 1950s. So what we were looking at is a general obligation bond is kind of like a loan, I guess. The town, we could have a bonding capacity, and our bonding capacity was about $2.9 million. We were only asking for $1.5 million, and what happens, investors purchase those bonds and kind of a loan. And so we have 10 to 15 years to pay off that loan at a very low interest rate.
Right.
So I think it's just a matter we did not educate the residents enough regarding the general obligation bond. And so I'm hoping in the future, it's not a dead thing. I'm hoping in the future that we will approach our residents and we will take a different approach in educating the residents more about what a general obligation bond. And even at that, it was how it would have increased your tax bill would have been very minimal, which would amount to maybe $7 to $10 a month more for residents.
So what are these current problems with the public safety building? What's going on there?
What happened is our public safety building was built in phases. And what one of the main problems we're having is the structures are splitting where the new phase had been added on, the building is separating. So we need to stabilize the structure to prevent any more or further damage to those walls where they're separating. And so that being one of them, of course, we have electrical plumbing issues that are against the codes.
These are official violations of codes?
Yeah, we have about 20 to 22 official violation codes, yes, on the building.
So have you thought of any alternative ways to obtain funds for that building?
Well, we have. At our last Board of Trustee meeting, which was this past Monday, one of the questions I did ask the Board of Trustees, letting them know it is our responsibility as a board and as a financial board to address these problems out there. And so I asked for suggestions or any ideas they might have or at the next meeting if they can come up with some ideas on how we can, if nothing else, phase out the different code violations, prioritizing also. Because it would be crazy for us, for example, we need a whole new roof. It would be crazy for us to replace the roof because it's cheaper to replace the roof than to address the building structure. Because eventually, if the building structure continues to separate, it's going to affect the roof.
The roof doesn't matter.
Correct. So we definitely have to look at each section to see how we're going to prioritize that, see what each phase is going to cost, and try to come up with a plan. We did at our meeting open up for public comments, and we had there was two constituents out there. One of them said she had supported the bond, her and her husband had supported the bond, and she felt that we need to address it. And her way of her suggestion was for probably the people, the 260 people that did vote in favor of the bond, what if they were able to, if we were to set up an account and whatever they would have been assessed with the assessment on their house and the general obligation rate, put that into a fund to fund the building. And those 260 people that voted in favor, if they felt they wanted to do the same thing, that on a yearly basis they can contribute that money they would have normally paid on that property tax bill into this fund to address the needs of the public safety building. Another constituent that was there came up and she said she would be willing to do anything fundraising for the public safety building also. The fire chief was there, and the Firefighters Association also have said that they are willing to go out there and do some fundraising if it meant standing in the corner with a fire boot for people to drop off donations, because they understand the importance, first of all, of the fire apparatus, because when they respond to a call, they need to make sure that truck is going to start to begin with. The other is that they have the proper equipment when they get to the scene to put out the fires or address what they're responding to the call for. So they understand the importance, and then also the different issues that are within the public safety building. For example, the kitchen, the stove cannot be utilized because we do not have the proper ventilation or hood for them to cook. So right now, even if they were to spend the night there, they don't have a place that they can cook meals. Oh, yes, a lot of takeout for things or sandwiches. The other is the sleeping quarters, where they have some beds in there to stay. It is connected to the bay, so when they have to start those vehicles, the fumes of the trucks go right into the sleeping quarters. So there's a lot of issues there, and they understand the importance of addressing these needs.
So you mentioned briefly the state appropriations you received for some projects, some capital improvement projects. What specifically will those be? What will the renovations be in the plaza and so forth?
That's what. First of all, we're just very thankful to the governor for signing two of the three bills. And one of them was for $250,000 to address the gazebo plaza renovations. And what that entails is our gazebo has termite damage. So the wood is in dire need of replacement. The building, the kiosco itself, was remodeled in the 70s, early 70s, 1970s. So with the termites, it has done a lot of damage to the structure, so we're having to replace all that and stabilize the structure. Right now, we do not allow the bands to set up in the gazebo because we're afraid the structure has been weakened by the termites, so we're afraid that it could collapse. So we have the bands out on the cement area, so it would most definitely be used. That would be a priority, to use the money to fix the gazebo. The other is the wiring around the whole plaza, beginning with the kiosco itself. When we have big events or Christmas lighting at Christmas time, the power goes off. So we need to put in more wires, additional wires, to address that. A lot of the posts, the lamp posts around the plaza, also have electrical shortages, and some have been damaged where people back into them. So those are things we need to address. And then if there are still funds available after we've addressed the structure and the wiring, the electrical wiring, we will look into replacing the benches around the plaza, fixing some of the bricks around the plaza, leveling out where the roots of some of the trees have lifted the bricks. So definitely those $250,000 will be used to the last dollar. And then the other project that the governor did sign was for $27,000 for road repairs, which the town is in dire need of monies or funding for road repairs. We just do basic temporary fixes and don't address the drainage problems from the bottom on up. And I just found out today also that the governor did sign some reauthorization monies, which amounts to, for two of them, it was about $85,000, and the other about $30,000. And the $30,000 will be used for road improvements, and the other $85,000, I think approximately $85,000, will be used for public safety, upgrading on public safety, or public works, I'm sorry.
So I'm curious, being that, you know, Mesilla is kind of dependent on tourism in a certain degree, how has tourism been in Mesilla lately?
Actually, it has picked up. Our gross receipts, and tourism is our major funding for the town of Mesilla. Tourism, that's our economic resource. And so we have seen an increase in our gross receipts, not significantly, but it has picked up. And so we've had maybe 2 months where we saw a drop from last year's. For that particular month, we did see a drop. But overall, I think we're, I would say, $10,000, $15,000 above what we had anticipated in increase in gross receipts. So we're doing well, and we're hoping that we're working with the largest tax. We just recreated a largest tax advisory board, and we have larger tax money. So we're hoping that we can start investing in promoting the town of Mesilla as a whole. And we're just trying to spread the word about the town of Mesilla beyond the boundaries of New Mexico, Arizona, Tri-Colorado, Texas, to encourage people to come and visit the town of Mesilla.
Mayor, thank you so much for joining us on Fronteras today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
More information on the town of Mesilla can be found online at mesilla-nm.us. I'm Vanessa Dobovich. Thanks for tuning into Fronteras, a Changing America.